The Dallas Video Fest was launched 27 years ago by a prophet of an oncoming video revolution. Almost three decades on, the fest continues to expand and explore how moving image technology intersects with the act of creation. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. This year's Dallas Video Fest runs October 8th to the 19th, and remarkably, after 27 years, the Dallas Video Fest is still guided by the same man, founder and director Bart Weiss, and I'm delighted to have Weiss back on the program today. Good morning, Bart.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Great. It's always good to talk to you, my friend. Congratulations, of course, on 27 years of the Dallas Video Festival. That's truly rare company you keep to have guided an institution like this for as long as you have. I should mention it's the oldest, largest video festival of its kind. Another kudos to you. When you started, though, back in, 1987 or so?
87, yeah.
Did you have any inkling that you would be onto something that would still be going strong almost three decades later?
No. As a matter of fact, when we did the first one, I didn't even think I was doing a second one.
That's the way these things start, right?
Story. This is absolutely true. It's like I was working on the, I was at a post facility where I was compiling the films together, having a particularly bad day. And the guy who was doing the Video Fest open for me said, "Hey, let me show you what I got. You're going to love this." So I walked into the animation suite and he showed me what he was working on for the intro, which was really beautiful and lifted my spirits. And then the credit at the end said, "The first annual Dallas Video Festival," and it had not occurred to me that we were going to do this again.
Fantastic. So it's because of him that you had to do it year after year after year.
Absolutely, absolutely. So anyway, I had not thought, really, at the time, I just thought that there were these wonderful things that were not being seen that I was aware of, and a kind of movement that was sort of happening. Mm. And I just had the ability from the Dallas Museum of Art to let us use their beautiful building, and so we went for it.
The rest is history, as they say.
Right.
But that longevity is not one that's shared by a lot of festivals in the world, and, you know, these things kind of come and go, and people's interests wax and wane. But if I can offer a bit of an outsider's perspective, having watched for the last decade what you've been doing, that you really are one of those rare, eternally curious and technologically excitable people that I know that also have a great balance between celebrating sort of the past and our moving image culture while still marveling at what's over the next horizon. And I got to believe that that's really why you're at year 27.
You know, I'm just interested in new things and different things. And, I'm constantly amazed at how people can sort of reinvent a documentary or take narrative and do a completely different thing. Well, at the same time, you know, because I was a film student back in the old days, I have such, you know, a deep ingrained love of traditional cinema, and some of which is forgotten and some of which needs to be sort of revived and remembered. And I think that the combination of this background in sort of classic storytelling through celluloid and, you know, moving into new possibilities of genres sort of allows people to be, you know, better viewers and to demand more of what they see in film, because there's so much out that's like available to people to see if you choose to look for good things rather than settling for the cat video that you're probably watching while listening to me.
Well, that's a good point, that there's always a new generation too that needs to be inspired by what's happening, but also understand the roots of where that comes from.
Yeah, you know, we're bringing in Charles Burnett to show Killer Sheep, and showing it in largely African American community, mostly to get young filmmakers in there to be inspired.
This was a seminal work from, 40 years ago now, almost?
Yeah, but it's something that you see that, and like a light bulb goes off, and to have him in the community, I know that we will see a payoff 3 or 4 years down the road when some kids that are in there are going to see that and will sort of see their community and make something that works for them. And, you know, that's part of our charge and what we want to do.
Well, I used a lot of ink trying to print out the wealth of films that you are showing. I think there's over 125 films in various types. you're showing, and looking across the breadth of your program this year, what really is astounding is the combination of both these characteristics of celebrating the roots of where our moving image culture comes from and the important filmmakers of the past, while also exposing people to, you know, that new spark that's coming down the road.
Yeah, you know, our opening night event is a silent Hitchcock film that is really not seen very much, The Lodger, which most people credit as the first true Hitchcock film. Mm-hmm. It's the first film he appears in, and the sort of main themes that sort of occupied his work sort of are clearly present there. But what we're doing to make this a really special event is that we're working with a group called the Dallas Chamber Symphony, which is this wonderful sort of youngish symphony orchestra as opposed to the Dallas Symphony Orchestra. And we have commissioned an original score. So it's not like it's an improvisation, which you see a lot of, and they're really kind of wonderful. But we have commissioned a score from this guy, Douglas Pipes, who is just an incredible composer. And I have not heard this score yet, but I am so excited to see how this thing plays out. It's something we are just really excited about. And I have to say, as a festival director, this is the most we've spent on a program in 2017. So I'm a little nervous about it, but I just totally believe that this was kind of an important thing to do. And then the other sort of classic thing is there's this wonderful documentary about Truffaut, and it's really based on these lectures that he did at the AFI that were videotaped in rather grungy 80s video fashion, but intercut with a lot of his films. And, you know, I've really understood, as somebody who's teaching now, how little this generation of filmmakers knows of the French New Wave in general. Mm-hmm. And it's such an important part of the history and aesthetics of cinema that hearing him talk about what he did and why, and getting, you know, another group of people to go out and rediscover those important films, I think will have an impact.
Well, again, something old, something new, something classic, something emerging, that duality is seen throughout the program. I'm wondering, though, the festival began as a showcase for the growing independent film and art movement that was really, back in the 80s, utilizing early video-based systems to tell stories and democratize storytelling and create work. But 27 years on, you know, times have certainly changed. The last 5 years have seen the almost complete collapse of film, at least as a medium, and non-film technologies have fully eclipsed celluloid. Most of the films we watch now have never touched film. We call them films, but when we go to most cinemas, we're watching video projection.
Right.
It seems like developments have moved to a point. Did you think 30 years ago that this thing that you were, this kind of edgy technology that was coming up that was allowing these artists around the fringes to make their work would somehow take over the establishment?
Yeah, I kind of always knew that. You know, I remember in the early days, the Sundance Film Festival would not show video. They were a film festival. Mm-hmm. And I remember saying, that's not going to last. There's no way they can sort of keep going in that direction. I clearly remember people, like, in their budgets for their films, their largest expense was the video to film transfer, so they could, you know, if they got into Sundance, they'd be able to do that. And don't get me wrong, I absolutely love film. I teach 16 millimeter film in my classes that I have there. I've done workshops for Kodak, but it is really kind of, you know, on its way out, unfortunately. And, you know, the largest nail in the coffin, I don't know if you know this, was NFL Films has moved from film to video. And NFL Films was the number one customer of Kodak for 16 millimeter film worldwide. I mean, they would be running in every stadium that had a game, many cameras every play. And that is, like, got to be a major, major hit for film. But the other side of it is that there are so many films, we use that term generically, that would not at all exist if people didn't have sort of easy access. You know, there have been kind of these major step forwards in sort of growth in the sort of 27 years. And obviously the early days of these little high-8 cameras, I think, were really good, but they were kind of grungy. But there was this get a little techie on you. The Sony VX1000 had this FireWire cable that it connected with Final Cut Pro, will allow people who had very little money to actually have broadcast quality video. And that was like a major, major thing, and that was like early 90s. And then about 5 or 6 years ago, when digital SLRs came out, and for very little money, you could have something that looked as good as something in a movie theater for very little money. That really changed the whole ball game, and that so many people could create theatrical quality material for very little money gave access to all kinds of work.
Well, what's interesting is, you know, you and I have been talking a lot about the medium, the form, right, whether it's digital or video or celluloid-based, but right, really what your festival also gets at is how the medium, how the content was affected as we made that shift, and how it broadened the sorts of people and voices that could find their way into moving images.
Yeah. I mean, there's many different kinds of films we have from very different communities.
I can see.
and you know, following all different kinds of stories. You know, back in the earlier days, the cameras were bigger. So if you're trying to follow an intimate portrait of somebody who's going through a difficult situation, you know, it's very hard to be... to get that emotional response if you're shooting all the time. But when your camera is really small, and you know, one of the other things we have this year is a festival within our festival of just things shot with a mobile device. And we have work sent to us from all over the world that was shot on mobile devices for this festival.
We're all filmmakers now, aren't we?
Yeah, and you know, if you use the new iPhone 6 Plus, you can have ultra slow motion and, you know, look at it on an HD monitor, otherwise known as your phone. It's truly amazing.
It's extraordinary. So I almost think film festivals like yours have gotten more and more important because everyone is making some form of film now, whether we think we are or not. Yeah. We're awash in this vast landscape of moving images being poured at us, and we need some sort of curatorial help in defining what we might want to be looking at so that we're not lost wading through these millions of YouTube videos. And I'm curious, the curatorial perspective, that you know, how you approach the festival from a meta perspective over the whole year, how you put these together with your team.
Well, so first, yes, I think that is really true. My goal is always to get to inspire people to look for better things rather than settle for what happens, you know, the videos that somebody sent you or something that just shows up on the front page of a search engine. I think that people are sort of want to see good work, but they settle for mediocrity in what they view in a way that's really kind of odd. Like, you know, when you buy a car, you don't settle for a mediocre car. You want a nice car. When you buy a house, when you do things, you want nice things. But we so much settle because so much of the way we encounter entertainment is we're sitting at home in our chairs and we'll just turn on what's on and we'll settle for what's in front of us. But if you know that there are better things out there, then you'll sort of take the effort and energy to be inspired because you know you can be inspired. Mm-hmm. And if you look at what's in front of you and say, that's not good enough, then it's a step to sort of being more enriched, and more enriched citizenry is, you know, better in so many ways. So the worlds exist. I get up and I think about, you know, what could be interesting for my festival. You know, it's just a way of life, you know. It's like you see an email that somebody saw something someplace, and you're like, okay, let me take a look at that. I talk to people who run other festivals. I go to a lot of other festivals. I talk to a lot of people. And it's also gotten to the point where people who know me and know my festival will say, oh, this film would be great for you. And that happens a lot, and oftentimes that's true. So you, there are things that you know, absolutely. There's no question that you're going to want to show. I mean, when I heard about the Truffaut film, there's, of course I wanted to show that, and I looked at it, it was good, and it was really kind of important. And then you start to figure out, you know, where you want to build from. I believe that putting a festival together, because I'm also a film editor, it's a lot like editing a film. You take different pieces, and like, where do you start opening night? And for us, it's the Hitchcock film, and that generates a lot of excitement and buzz. And so, okay, so where do you go from there? Okay, so we'll have a social issue documentary after that, and then something that's kind of more entertaining, a film about wrestling in Dallas in the 80s. It combined music, video, and wrestling in an early kind of way that I know will touch a completely different audience. There will be people who will come to that film who won't come to anything else, but they'll come there, they'll experience that, and then they'll maybe see there's some buzz going on and hang out and maybe do something else. And then there are films that I know that are sort of touch a popular culture nerve, and then there's some things that are sort of specific to if you're interested in sort of end-of-life issues. We have two films about people who are dying and how they sort of dealt with it and the people around them that are dealt with it. And they're both of them just incredibly powerful and moving. And then we have this this film about, okay, so do you eat General Tso's chicken? Like, you know that? Yeah. There's this film that is a feature documentary about who is this guy, General Tso, and why are we eating his chicken? And on one hand, it's a very kind of like funny, goofy thing, but it gets this exploration about culture and how culture gets absorbed into American culture. That, you know, when the Chinese came to the United States, they were basically allowed to either open laundries or open restaurants. So they opened restaurants and served American food. And then, you know, slightly they would get in and serve chop suey, which, of course, has no Chinese in it at all. It's an American dish. And then how sort of these elements of true Chinese food started to emerge and how that affected culture and what it meant to be Chinese in America. So it's really about how assimilation happens, but told in this incredibly charming way in this film about chicken.
Well, and clearly the threads between all that is a very personal one, and that's what I think also marks the great film festivals. At the heart of them is there's a singular individual or a very small dedicated group that have a perspective that somehow you can intuit as you look across or immerse yourself in a festival program like this.
Just trust me, you know.
Right.
You know, there's a reason everything is there. It might not be obvious in the beginning, but there really is. And, oh, one of the other things we do that I don't think anybody else does, on the front page of our website, there's a little button that says, Ask Bart. Not sure what you want to see? Send me an email. I'll tell you what to go see. And I answer
your own personal concierge.
Right. I answer every one of these myself. It's like, you know, I can come Thursday. What should I go see? And I'll tell them. I want people to have a really good experience and come back.
You're 27 years in, and you've kind of got your pulse on technology and developments, and you lay awake at night, I'm sure, dreaming about what comes next. What comes next? Where is the future taking us?
Well, you know, there's so many ways in which, you know, you think you know what's coming, and you really don't. Clearly, to me, the major change is going to be more mobile. I mean, just looking at the new iPhone and how large that is, and indeed it is a high-definition display that you will constantly have in your hand. What does that mean for us kind of viewing things? But then, like, what does that mean for something like what we do, which is a festival where you sort of come to us? You know, are those kind of things going to sort of no longer exist? I don't know. I mean, I think there is still a kind of need to see things in a larger screen and to see things together. The sense
yes.
of community we have, you know, there truly are people who come to our festival who that's the only time they see each other. It's like this community, like, comes together out of nothing, spends, used to be just a weekend, and now it's two weekends together, and then disbands and won't see each other for another year. Oh, and I do want to talk about why we went to a two-week format instead of a one-week format, which in one sense is like totally crazy. I'm already tired. How long can I stay tired?
You're going to get that bump, though, opening night, that'll carry you through.
But the thing is, and Charles, you go to a lot of festivals. When you have to make a choice between four things, there's always a level of anxiety that, like, I'm not in the right room. That what's in the next room is a lot better than what I'm seeing right now. And even though you're enjoying it, there's still this underlying anxiety. And so I thought, let's just have two choices. You know, one choice I couldn't do. If I was putting everything together, you just want to have the ability to have more things going on to bring more of a community together. So I thought that would be a sort of better. And the other thing, you know, quite honestly, is, you know, I can intro four things at once. Right? You know, I have done it, but that's really draining. Introing two things at once, I could do a lot better.
Well, I know after 27 years, I have no worries that you'll be able to stand upright and introduce whatever is put in front of you. And I know you're going to have as much fun as all of the attendees at your festival, because it's what you love, and it just comes, that passion comes out in everything you do. So once again,
and Charles, you know this as well. To me, what I love the most at the festival, there's actually two moments in the year that are really, it's like having a meal with people who came into town, who particularly if you have like two different or three or four different people who have other films coming in, and sort of hanging in with this discussion of all these people that you love their work, and they get to meet each other and talk to each other, and you're part of that discussion. That is such a wonderful, you know, evening and a moment. But while you're there, it's sort of like beautiful, and it's just kind of amazing, you know. And I'm sure you've had that experience many times.
Oh, yeah.
It kind of resonates very deeply, and it keeps you moving. The other thing is, for me, a great moment of the year is when I go to the designer and I see what they've come up with for an image for the festival, or also the festival open, which I obsessed way, way, way too much about these details. But I see somebody who, like, doesn't know me very well. I just talk to him about what I love about doing the festival, and they come up with this image that talks about what's in my head, but I've never seen it that way. And it really kind of makes me say, yeah, that's what I do. And that's always just such, it just gets such a charge out of that. Oh, and by the way, one more thing. There's just like Steve Jobs, one more thing. This year, you know, we always have posters and T-shirts and this and that. But the fashion designer and Todd Oldham is creating a VideoFest bandana this year. And that is a real rarity. And that's going to be very, very cool. And I have not seen that yet, and I'm very excited.
Well, I know our astute listeners will get a charge out of enjoying your festival and the many moments you've created during those 11 days. And I hope some of them will decide to hop a quick plane to Dallas and immerse themselves in this great programming. Congratulations again on your 27th Dallas Video Festival. Always great to talk with you, Bart.
Charles, it's always great to talk with you. And people of El Paso, you have a great treasure in Charles Horak. So enjoy this show.
I've been discussing the upcoming 27th annual Dallas Video Fest with founder and director Bart Weiss. This year's Dallas Video Fest will run October 8th to the 19th and will kick off with an opening night screening of the new restoration of Alfred Hitchcock's seminal 1927 film, The Lodger. For a complete list of films, showtimes, and other festival information, log on to videofest.org. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.